Confused about the end times? On the weekend following the 9/11 attack, Bob Enyart presented the End Times Seminar, which puts 9/11 into proper biblical perspective and helps us to understand the Bible's end times message for the body of Christ. Bob's End Times Seminar is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I like that opening music, Fred. Welcome to another Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer. I love that opening, too.
Tony Funderburk, he does the Bob Enyart Live opening music for decades now. He's just so talented, and he's got great kid songs, custom kid songs. So, Fred, we are today concluding our list of not-so-old things.
That's right. Does this become the 2013 list of not-so-old things?
That's right. It's our annual tradition. And why don't we begin with fast rocks? Seems like it takes rocks a long time to solidify. You know, you have sediments and all.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I was taught in high school.
Everything takes millions and billions.
Yeah, long time.
Billions and billions.
For the rock to harden.
But it turns out that rocks can form rapidly. They could harden within hours, even minutes.
Wow. Yeah, almost as hard as marble, right?
Well, that's right. In fact, there's three ways that we know of to turn wet sand into solid rock. And the one you just mentioned is so interesting because it ties into the global flood. Scientists at Murdoch University in Australia, they experimented and they did such a great job. Now they sell this as a commercial product. It's a spray where they mix bacteria from soil into water. They spray it on sand, and it turns the sand into stone.
Sand into stone in a matter of minutes.
This is just shocking. In fact, what they say, and this has been published and peer-reviewed, they say you end up with something resembling marble more than sandstone. So it's harder than sandstone. It's almost as hard as marble.
That's amazing. So the other technique's vibration, right?
You can vibrate mud, so there's water in it, and by vibration, you force the water out of the mud, and it can cause the grains to settle into an extremely rock-hard material. In fact, an occasional listener told me about his grandfather's farm, and his grandfather would use a post-hole digger to put in a fence around his property, and instead of using cement, which costs money, he just put the dirt back in around the post, wet it, and use a vibration machine, a vibrator. And he said within minutes, they couldn't pull that post out of the ground with the tractor. It was in like with concrete.
Wow.
But it was just fast rock.
Yeah, that's amazing. Never heard of that. I mean, definitely save on cement. Of course, you got to go buy this device.
The vibrator.
Yeah.
That's true. And then there's a third way.
The third way is what? Premium water? Distilled water? Or just plain old water.
Plain old water sprayed on limestone, soft limestone. Miners in Australia discovered this because they don't want a mine to collapse on them. And the material they were digging through was so soft, it was susceptible to collapse. But they found out by accident, you know, you drop water on some of it, and then it's as hard as rock. Hard rock. So now they will spray water on soft limestone, turns it into rock. Those are three things that were common during the global flood.
You would think so, right? I think I heard water mentioned a few times.
Yeah, that's right. Vibration and bacteria.
Yeah.
Bacteria from the crust of the earth. During the global flood, the floodwaters would have been warm, and that would really lead to bacteria multiplying exponentially. And so there's plenty of biological chemical agent available to turn these sediments rapidly into stone.
Yeah. So as the sediments are forming, a lot of things are hardening very quickly. I think even as a creationist, you maybe don't think of that concept when you think of a global flood, but just how rapid everything was hardening. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's easily demonstrated, as we've just talked about.
Yeah. And that's what's so fun about so many of the creationist arguments is that they're based on testable physics, where the Big Bang, dark energy, dark matter, a biogenesis, life arising from inanimate material, those things are not testable in any way. And yet, over and over and again, creationists are showing that you can use physics, use biology, use the laws of the natural sciences to affirm the biblical history of the world.
This next example we have, which is one of our favorites, is carbon 14.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we know scientifically that carbon 14 forms when nitrogen gets bombarded with solar neutrinos. It knocks off some atoms, and you got carbon 14 that over time is going to change back into nitrogen, right?
Let me understand that. You just explained it. I'm a talk show host. You're an engineer. So you have nitrogen, and up in the atmosphere, it is converted into carbon 14.
Yeah, a small percentage is converted to carbon 14.
But carbon 14 is radioactive. That is, it decays quickly.
Yeah, it's unstable, so it starts to decay back into nitrogen.
It only lasts for thousands of years.
That's right. The half life is like 5,700 years. So in half a life, in 5,700 years, it'd be right back to half of it.
So if you had 1,000 atoms to start with, after about 6,000 years, you're down to 500. 6,000 more, 250, 125, 64. Pretty soon, yeah, you got none.
Carbon 14 dating really only works, what, to about maybe 50,000 years. So I think even the theoretical max of carbon 14 dating is maybe 100,000 years, where you might find a single carbon
one atom left.
And you have to use incredibly sophisticated equipment.
Yeah. Right. That squirrel died 100,000 years ago.
Because he had one carbon 14 atom left.
And so it turns out that unlike other radioactive dating mechanisms, where half lives are in the millions of years range, carbon 14 is very short lived. It only survives for thousands of years. So if you find it and you could rule out contamination, this is powerful evidence that this thing you're looking at that has carbon 14 in it is not millions of years old. It's only thousands of years old.
Yeah. For example, they say oil is millions of years old, right?
They sure do.
But wait a minute. We're finding carbon 14 in it, and no matter how careful they are to prevent contamination, they still find carbon 14. Yet oil is supposed to be millions of years old. The carbon 14 should be long gone. It should have already decayed into nitrogen.
Right. And oil is typically pumped up from deep under the crust of the earth. And carbon 14 forms in the upper atmosphere. It gets ingested or breathed in by plants and animals. And so when they die, then they stop absorbing carbon 14.
And the clock starts ticking.
Right. And so they're losing their carbon 14. That's the whole idea of carbon 14 dating. But then as you get into the Earth's crust, you go down 1,000 feet under the Earth's crust, there should be no carbon 14 down there.
There shouldn't be.
And you're pumping up oil and you use laboratory techniques to be extremely careful so that you're not contaminating your own specimen, and you date it and you find carbon 14, that encourages creationists, because carbon 14 is the friend of the young earth believer, not of the evolutionist.
That's right. And we find it everywhere, right? Things are supposed to be millions of years old. We find it in also natural gas, limestone, petrified wood. You know, we're always being told petrified wood is millions of years old.
How
we found
be.
A petrified piece of wood, it's millions of years
it's
old.
It's got to be.
Well, it's got, you know, carbon 14 in it, so it's not millions of years old.
Right.
Coal, they say, what, 60 to 80 million years old, however they, whatever the dates are, you know, they range.
Yeah.
But hey, carbon 14 again, no matter how careful we are, we find carbon 14.
I think you said limestone, in graphite, in marble, in deep groundwater, in dinosaur fossils that are supposed to be 65 million. 80 million years old.
And the next one is my favorite.
What?
Diamonds.
Diamonds.
Diamonds are really hard, aren't they?
Yeah.
What's carbon 14 doing in there?
Diamonds are the hardest naturally occurring substance on Earth. So it's a premium kind of specimen for ruling out contamination. Plus the lattice, the crystal lattice that the carbon atoms make, it's just a perfect kind of specimen for figuring out, are there cracks in this diamond? Is there somehow something from outside of this diamond seeping into the diamond? And so they get a perfect diamond into a lab, they break it, they treat it properly, they put it in their AMS, you know, their atomic mass spectrometer, and they're practically counting individual carbon atoms. That's how good they are at this. And they say, whoa, that diamond has carbon 14 in it.
What's it doing in there? Again, the hardest natural substance, my wife might dispute that. She might say my head is.
Right.
But carbon 14 is a friend of creationists, but it's amazing how many people think that carbon 14 proves an old earth. It's the opposite. It's
right.
Horrible
yeah.
for the evolutionists. They really can't explain it because they can't blame it on contamination, right?
Well, that's right. And it shows how bad our government schools are. Because, I mean, that's got to be the typical answer I get. Why do you think the earth is millions of years old? They say carbon 14.
Yeah. I could almost safely say 90% of the time that's the answer you're going to get.
Right. Which shows they completely misunderstand even the evolutionary science.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every physicist in the world would tell them that carbon 14 only lasts thousands of years. So the argument can't possibly show that the earth is millions of years old. So they misunderstand the science at the most basic level, and then they're gullible anyway because they just believe it regardless. Even if the argument is known to be false, they still believe it.
Well, you know, one assumption they make is that carbon 13 maybe was in that substance and captured a neutron?
Neutron
makes
capture.
It carbon 14?
Yeah, we should talk through that because now from more sophisticated evolutionists, you hear this argument. So first of all, the claim was it's all contamination, but you find it inside of diamonds and you find it in dinosaur bones. And Fred, we're also finding it in dinosaur bones that have original dinosaur soft tissue.
Oops.
So the original soft tissue says this bone has not been subject to contamination. If it had, it would have destroyed the original dinosaur tissue.
That's right.
So it's an uncontaminated bone with carbon 14 in it. That's so powerful. But so the more sophisticated evolutionists, then they go to a tertiary argument, not a secondary.
A tertiary.
No, a tertiary okay. one. So here's their third argument, the rescue device. They say, well, this must be neutron capture because clearly this diamond or this dinosaur bone is millions of years old. So how could it have carbon 14 in it? Well, you mentioned that carbon 14 is produced in the atmosphere. Well, there's another way to make it. If you have a uranium mine, so it's very radioactive,
mm-hmm.
and you have some carbon in there, then as the uranium is decaying, it'll shoot off, you know, alpha particles, beta particles. It could even shoot off an entire carbon 14 atom. That's one of the decay chances. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you have radioactive decay and there's a neutron that's shot off and it goes tiny distances till it hits something. And if it hits a carbon 13 atom and that atom captures it in the nucleus, then voila, you've produced carbon 14. So that is true. That's a valid understanding of physics. So the question is, does that explain the carbon 14 in dinosaur bones and in marble and in diamonds and so on? And so for it to explain that, these specimens would have to be excavated from within uranium mines.
Mm-hmm.
You need a tremendous amount of uranium to account for all the carbon 14 in all these different specimens. But it turns out that in one case, scientists tested their dinosaur bones for radioactivity and they found virtually none.
Virtually none.
Like,
so
orders of magnitude, mm-hmm. like just a few parts per million, orders of magnitude too few to account for all that carbon 14. So it's not from radioactivity either.
That's right, Bob. Also consider what Dr. Geim said. He noticed that if neutron capture is a significant source of carbon 14 in a given sample, radiocarbon dates should vary wildly with the nitrogen content in the sample. But he says he doesn't see this at all. He knows of no such data.
Oh, yeah. So if the radioactivity was explaining it, then if your specimen had more or less nitrogen, there should be more or less carbon 14.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying that's just not the case.
Yeah. So this doesn't fit the evidence either, does it?
Yeah. So diamonds are a creationist best friend, and carbon 14 is the friend of the creationist, showing that all these things, oil, limestone, natural gas, marble, petrified wood, coal, diamonds, dinosaur fossils, they're all only thousands of years old, not millions.
That's right. So, Bob, is it possible to have a negative age? Like if someone says I'm minus 50 years old?
Well, it shouldn't be possible.
It shouldn't be. No.
Why? Why do you ask?
Well, aren't they finding rocks at the bottom of the canyon that are...
Okay. Our next item has to do with radiometric dating. Maybe we could call it radiometric speed dating.
Okay.
Because they date rocks at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, and they say, well, these rocks are about a billion years old.
So then they date rocks at the top of the canyon.
Yes.
And those should be what? Less
than a billion.
Yeah, they should be less than a billion years old. They're 1.3 billion years old.
1.3 billion. So here's what they say. That lava that flowed at the top of the Grand Canyon, they dated it by rubidium strontium, that radiometric dating method. And they got an age of 1.3 billion years old. So how could the rock at the top of the canyon be 300 million years older than the rock at the bottom of the canyon, having solidified that much earlier? Of course, it's logically impossible.
That's right. It'd be like me saying, Bob, do you know I have a biological granddad that's 30 years younger than me?
You do.
And if I told that to you, you'd probably sit there and think maybe just for a second, and then you'd go, you know, this is the reason why Colorado shouldn't legalize pot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And so it turns out that this is common. Like, with Mount St. Helens, that erupted in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
6 years later, lava was still flowing. So in 1996, they took some of that lava that had solidified just 10 years earlier, and they dated it by potassium-argon method. You remember how old it was?
It was older than the eruption.
It sure was, by 350,000 years.
And yet the rock formed after the eruption.
Right. So they said it was 350,000 years ago that this lava hardened into stone. Oops, that was wrong. And this is constant.
So should people have faith in these radiometric dating methods, these dates they hear from the evolutionists?
They have extreme assumptions, and the assumptions are proved to be false over and over again.
Yeah, and every time we date a rock where we know the age, we get a date that's crazy. And yet we're supposed to trust the dates of the rocks where we don't know the age.
Yeah, at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, there's one rock flow, and it renders dates 100 million years apart or more. It,
of the same rock flow, right? One part of the rock flow is older than another part, and it's the same rock flow. Millions of years, it's different.
Yeah, in fact, Mount St. Helens lava, there are minerals within that lava that are dated. Sometimes they'll separate out certain minerals in a specimen, and they date those. And they say these minerals, they were magma, they were molten, but they hardened 2 million years ago, and it was only in 1986.
Yep.
So they were off by 2 million years.
Just off by a little.
Yeah, that's normal. So we were talking about the Grand Canyon. Why don't we talk about the layers of the Grand Canyon?
Layers that show lots of erosion from water, because, you know, water really erodes very effectively over time, right? Mm. I mean, you were talking about in Europe, you visited what?
Ephesus in Turkey.
And cities that were there 2,000 years ago are gone.
In 2,000 years, the erosion is extraordinary, even in 500 years. If you know the terrain around where you live and you find out what was it like 100 years ago, erosion is ruthless. So at the Grand Canyon, there are these layers, the strata, they call them flat gaps, the boundaries between the strata, hundreds of layers of strata.
And these are supposed to be gaps between layers that are millions of years apart, right?
Yeah,
so that's a long time for water to do erosion, yet these gaps are flat.
Yeah, so they say the bottom of the canyon's like a billion years ago. And so it took millions of years for all these layers of strata to be laid down, they say, allegedly. And when you look, if you stand on the north rim and you look to the south, or at the south rim, you look to the north, all your eye can see, and it covers 100,000 square miles, is strata that have beautifully flat boundaries. Between them, where's all the irregularity of millions of years of erosion? It's not there, and it should be everywhere.
The erosion's gone. So, Bob, I think I have a theory.
You know,
I really like Fred Flintstone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's real handy because
and
people
Wilma,
ask.
Wilma.
That's right. Because I'll call and I'll have to give my name for something to fill out some form or whatever. And they'll say, oh, okay, Ted or Ed. I'm like, no. So I always tell people Fred, like Flintstone, and then they chuckle.
And they get
know
it immediately.
It doesn't matter what generation you are.
Everybody, he's an icon.
He's an icon.
Yes.
So my theory is he worked in, I think, a gravel pit or something like that.
Yeah.
He must have had a steamroller, and he would steamroll and keep those layers flat. But then all his kids and grandkids and great-great-great-grandkids, it had to be a tradition. They had to keep those layers flat for millions of years.
At the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Every time more sediments were deposited, they just
were very dedicated.
And I guess before the cavemen, it must have been Lucy.
Yeah.
In Australopithecus. They used to do it.
That's right. That's why they were humped over. All that hard work.
Yeah.
So
it's silly to think that there were millions of years between all those strata.
So you can accept that, or you can accept real science.
Real science
radio.
Real
science says what?
What? That God created the earth less than 10,000 years ago, and he judged the earth in the global flood at the time of Noah about 5,000 years ago, rough numbers. And in doing so, because of a global flood, the continents received over a mile thick of sedimentary layers on average on the continents.
Yeah, and as we talked about earlier, hardened really quickly. And Bob, not only that, quite a few evolutionists now agree with us, right?
With what part?
The part about the Grand Canyon being carved out rapidly by some kind of water.
Well, increasingly, the story of the Colorado River carving it is being discredited. For one, rivers don't continually erode downward. The riverbed has sediment, mm-hmm. and the sediment protects the riverbed from eroding further downward.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So apart from a catastrophic scouring of the river, it's not eroding. Rivers don't keep getting deeper. So that in and of itself, there's so many reasons why the traditional story is being doubted. And so there's alternatives, including a natural lake breach, like Grand Lake mm-hmm. and Hopi Lake, both breached, carved out the canyon rapidly. The evidence is overwhelming. That's how the Grand Canyon formed, maybe a couple centuries or so after the global flood.
Oh, you think it was a time after the global flood? Because
yeah.
a lot of people think it was at the global flood.
Well,
that's interesting.
If the global flood caused the Grand Canyon, then why wouldn't we have Grand Canyons all over the world? Because it was mm-hmm. a global flood. This is one of the seven wonders of the world. I mean, if you took one of the side canyons and you put it in Maine, it would be
a
major
huge. Yeah.
tourist attraction.
Yeah, I spent 7 days down the bottom of the canyon. It's pretty amazing.
It's awesome,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, this was formed. In fact, Walt Brown has the most popular article on the entire internet, Origin of the Grand Canyon. Just Google Origin of the Grand Canyon. And his hydroplate theory in the beginning book explains. It's
a book we highly recommend, right?
Brilliant.
It's got great pictures to go with all the data that's in
yeah.
there. It's very well researched.
Fabulous,
highly recommend it.
Fabulous book. And we sell it here at Real Science Radio, and that helps us stay on the air. So if somebody would like to read Walt Brown's book or get our hydroplate theory CD set, where we interview Walt Brown, you and I do a show on radioactivity, just a lot of great shows. You can get that too, or any of our fun science DVDs. You'll love them, and you'll help us stay on the air.
Yeah, and that's realscienceradio.com. That's
and just
where they can
click
go, right?
on the store. That's
yeah.
right. Okay, so Fred, something else about the Grand Canyon. The National Park Service, we link to that in our show summary for today's program, and the USGS, I mean, geologists generally, they claim something absurd. You look at all the flat boundaries in the Grand Canyon and point to one of them where you see no erosion at all. And they'll say right here, there was a missing strata. 6 million years passed from this layer to that layer. And there's
Where'd it go?
No evidence of it at all. And Fred, we show a beautiful photo mm-hmm. of the canyon and we point the arrows to where they say the years. Then they say at this layer here, there's 14 million years missing. Then there's another arrow, and it says they believe, these are the evolutionary geologists as a group, that there are 100 million years missing at this one point, this one flat gap, the entire Ordovician and Silurian epochs, they say.
Where do they say it went?
I don't know.
Was it beamed up, Scotty?
I don't know. So this is powerful evidence that
wow.
these things are not true. Their old Earth time frame is not true. Fred, we only have 3 more minutes. Left-handed amino acids are so neat because in inanimate matter, acids are right and left-handed. They're two different kinds of molecules. In life, all proteins are left-handed, and the more they're testing things that are supposed to be millions of years old, they're finding that they have still their left-handedness.
They haven't decayed into the state where there's half and half, right?
Right.
Over time, you should have both 50% left and 50% right-handed amino acids.
And that should take about 100,000 to a million years based on, you know, England's Royal Society peer-reviewed scientific
measurements they're doing. And they gave a worst case of a million years.
Yeah.
It definitely wouldn't take a million.
No.
So that's their worst case.
And so here we have in, 3 billion year old minerals from South America. 3 billion, mostly all left-handed amino acids.
They haven't all gone to half and half.
Eggshells from dinosaurs, left-handed amino acids.
Wait a minute. Dr. Seuss said that dinosaurs are 80 million years old.
Well,
are you telling me this isn't true?
It's not true. The arguments, the evidence is so powerful. We have a photo of the Palouse River Gorge in the state of Washington.
And you can get to that photo by going to realscienceradio.com, and then it's the list of not so old things. A lot of times you have it predominantly one of the first things you can click on,
right? That's right. Just go to realscienceradio.com, look on the right, it says start here, click on our list of not so old things. You will see a photo of the Palouse River Gorge. If you show that to a geologist and say, how long did it take that to form? They'll say, well, it eroded, you know, take millions of years. Well, now they know it was formed rapidly in a local flood, the Lake Missoula flood that you and I talked about two shows ago at the beginning of the series. So this gorge formed within hours and days, not over thousands or millions, they'd say millions of years.
And we've talked in prior shows about how quickly water can just cut through rock like butter due to liquefaction. And, you know, the process is amazing. It's carved out quickly, not over millions of years.
Yeah. So, Fred, then there's so many other things we could add. Fossil wood from England dated at 25,000 years by carbon 14.
Where is that wood?
They found it in 183 million year old limestone.
Oops. How did it end up in there?
Oops. Mammal hair found in supposedly 100 million year old amber. Looks surprisingly similar to modern hair. Read identical. Geologists say Uganda lava is just thousands of years old, but it's dated radioactively at 773 million years old. And it goes on and on. That's the story because all the claims that these things are millions of years old, they were all fabricated. They were all twisted. The data was twisted to get the results manipulated that the evolutionists wanted. And that's why it turns out it's so easy for creationists to come through and show the truth that these things are all wildly exaggerated.
Yeah, the evidence overwhelmingly fits the Bible.
It sure does. And the Bible speaks of Jesus Christ. We're out of time. Thank you, Fred Williams. Another episode of Real Science Radio. Our website, realscienceradio.com. And please check out our store. And you can even donate to Real Science Radio because we need your help to stay on the air. God bless you.
Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Talking about.
Confused about the end times? On the weekend following the 9/11 attack, Bob Enyart presented the End Times Seminar, which puts 9/11 into proper biblical perspective and helps us to understand the Bible's end times message for the body of Christ. Bob's End Times Seminar is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com.